Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network. It's another week of cinema releases that have arrived and we'll be diving into them. And this week we'll be looking at In the Heights, Nobody and The Father. And joining me as ever is Dallas. How are you this week, Dallas, after another weekend of film watching?
I feel good about film watching, but I've regressed to 18 years old because, you know, we've just, you know, literally about 5 minutes before the start of this podcast, watched Scotland play in a major tournament for the first time in 23 years. And I've just remembered what it's like to watch Scotland in a major tournament. A sense of inevitable crushing disappointment.
Yes. It was a nice little reprieve from work for a couple of hours. But, I mean, that second goal just kind of felt like, yep, I've seen this story all too many times before. And what made it worse was my trusty TV of 8 years finally died last night. So I had to make do with watching it on iPlayer on my MacBook. So my new TV doesn't arrive till Wednesday. And I was just sitting there watching it. And like, I just saw this flood of messages come through in my group chat where it was like, F-sake and unt and all this sort of stuff. And it was like, yep, iPlayer's behind, and 3, 2, 1, and there it goes. So yeah, there's something to be said about going to the cinema and being surprised and blown away by something and not having anything spoiled on your phone. So yeah, I love football, but God, it's a tough mistress.
Absolutely. But hey, at least did you get a good deal on a new TV? Because I expect there was probably lots of new design tellies that were probably meant to be sort of bought last summer, but of course all the major sporting events got postponed because that's apparently what TV companies do. They basically plan for like that everyone's going to get a new telly every 4 years to watch the major sporting events. So did you manage to pick up a bargain?
I did, kind of, yeah. I finally got a 4K went from 43 inch to 50. The joy of Amazon, it offers like, obviously it was a bit of an unpleasant thing to discover I needed to buy a new TV last night, but yeah, Amazon are quite good, some of their products. So I got a good Samsung TV and they were like, and we'll take it in 5 payments interest free, and you're like, that's a good deal. You're horrible with terrible ethics and things like that, but I will take
but
the
I
deal.
Need a new TV in 48 hours, so yes.
Exactly, so it's all worked itself out. So yeah, I've been pretty busy this past weekend, so I've not seen as many films as I'd kind of hoped to at home or in the cinema, but I have seen one of the films that we're going to talk about today in the cinema, another I've seen in a screener, and then in about 55 minutes I will be sitting down to watch one of these on the big screen. But one I haven't had the chance to see yet, obviously, is In the Heights. So I missed the chance to see the previews for this one on Friday. It's been getting a lot of kind of rollout from Warner Brothers. It's like little screenings and preview events, and unfortunately it seems to have kind of backfired potentially. Well, certainly going by the US box office, it kind of came in behind A Quiet Place 2 in its third week, getting 11 million, and now the whole discourse has begun about original films and, you know, versus this, where did Warner Brothers go wrong, everything like that. But Dallas, you've been lucky enough to see this film, and you saw it kind of interestingly in America, I guess.
It was the opening film of the Tribeca Film Festival, which I am attending virtually from the comfort of my own home. And yeah, no, I saw the disappointing box office news on it. You know, if you had, well, I think that it's always part of the problem of living in a film Twitter bundle is that everyone gets really excited, but then it rarely sort of rolls out to the rest of the public. But you know, obviously, you know, there was a lot of pedigree with this film. You know, it's from the creator of Hamilton, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who, you know, it's won every sort of Tony going, this one won Tony's, you know, it's big summer musical, you know, it's got big trailers, you know, it's the type of film everyone says you must see in the cinema. Clearly, you know, some people saw it in the cinema, not too many. I think if going forward, I think Warner Brothers and HBO Max need to potentially, you know, do what Netflix does, and you know, if they want to lie and just make up a number of how many people watch it at home, fine, but at least it will give some sort of, And now, you know, something for the box office analyzers to chew over in the fact that comparing, you know, box office weekends versus how many people stayed at home to watch it at home and how much money was made that way. You know, it's always a thing with these day and dates. I noticed some people basically saying that they were fearful now for what was going to happen to Denis Villeneuve's Dune when it opens day and date in America. Thankfully, we'll be getting a full cinema release only here in the UK, which is good. But yeah, I had not ever seen the musical In the Heights. I had seen Hamilton a couple of years ago in London, and you know, I think Lee yourself, you blamed it on my festival fatigue of being at the film festival, that I was kind of just about it. So this one was, you know, set in New York, so obviously that's a big tick for me, and I think potentially I preferred it to Hamilton. I think it's very sort of traditional sort of story of, you know, these sort of the dreamers, the US sort of form of dreamers of sort of second, third generation, Americans who sort of are looking to better their life within America, if they can, even though that, you know, everything is up against them, and, you know, whenever they're feeling down or feeling happy, everything obviously must break out into a song and a big musical number, because hey, that's how life works. And yeah, it was an interesting one. You know, obviously musicals, they are quite long, so this was about 2 hours 23 minutes. Did it need to be that long? Probably not. I think some of the songs maybe started to get slightly sort of repetitive in terms of theme, sort of moving onwards. But I mean, I certainly couldn't fault the execution of it in terms of its direction, choreography, and sort of staging. I think even though I've only seen Hamilton on stage without Lin-Manuel Miranda in it, and then the on Disney Plus with him in it, and I think sort of seeing him in Mary Poppins Returns, he plays a smaller role in this film because he's sort of essentially aged out of the Usnavi character, who I think he originated on Broadway. But there's just something about the way that it's written that, even though Anthony Ramos, who was very good in the film, when he was singing and rapping and stuff like that, it sounded like it was written and being performed by Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's like it was written for his voice, and that's his voice was the one that I was hearing, which I found slightly odd while watching it. But I think, you know, as a movie to get people back into the big screen experience, I think it's certainly going to do that. And I think if you're a musical fan or a New York fan or something like that, then I think it's definitely probably worth checking out on the big screen.
One film we both have kind of seen in the past few days is Nobody. So, and a film that when you hear the plot synopsis and see the film, it is of no surprise whatsoever that it's from the writer of the John Wick trilogy, Derek Coulstead. But Bob Odenkirk, in a bit of a surprising role, plays a bystander who intervenes to help a woman who is being harassed by a group of men and becomes the target of a vengeful Russian drug lord. So Dallas, what did you make of this one? This is a film that's been delayed and delayed and delayed, and it's obviously been out in America for a little while on VOD. What did you make of Nobody? Was this one where you were looking forward to going back to the cinema to see a good old-fashioned beat 'em up with a sort of regular Joe at the heart of it in the form of Bob Odenkirk?
Yes and no. I mean, the trailer looked good, if a bit predictable, in the fact that, I mean, as you say, from the writer of John Wick, who basically is just taken instead of, you know, Keanu Reeves, essentially just dropped Bob Odenkirk into it, in the fact that, you know, but this, yeah, thankfully for Bob Odenkirk's character, he still has his family, and, you know, hasn't had his dog killed and stuff like that. Spoiler, if you haven't seen John Wick already. And, you know, it was like, but I was interested to see, you know, every now and again, you know, they've managed to do this. So, like, you know, Keanu Reeves was, you could totally buy him as a former assassin and stuff like that. This one sort of strays into the, I guess, sort of Liam Neeson territory of older actor who is turned into unexpected action star. And I think on paper, Bob Odenkirk is probably one of the most unexpected choices for something like this. I think most people will know him from sort of Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad and stuff like that. But I think what this film does very, very well is by the end of it, you are completely convinced that Bob Odenkirk is an action star. I thought he was fantastic in it. I thought some of the choreography and sort of fight scenes were fantastic as well. Again, there's this thing where people, I don't know when it started, it seems to have happened in like the last 3 months or whatever, but people keep talking about needle drops in relation to film, and people kept talking about one particular needle drop. And it's almost like a spoiler now where I keep thinking, okay, what is the song that they're going to drop in it? And I was thinking, right, it's probably going to, film's going to end on a cut to black and have like Ain't Nobody playing stuff like that. But I think it turned out to be that people were talking about the use of You'll Never Walk Alone, which has been famously adopted by the Liverpool fans. So I think that one was the one that came in there. But yeah, no, it was a welcome diverting, you know, well choreographed, well played out action film. Does it reinvent the wheel? Not particularly, because it is essentially plot-wise almost exactly the same as John Wick, and the fact that, you know, after a particularly bad day, Bob Odenkirk's character goes out, beats up a couple of people, but of course it turns out he beats up the wrong people, which then sets him up against him and whatever. And yeah, it turns out he's a much better guy than, you know, everyone was expecting this family man to be, but you know, I had a good time, and sometimes that's all you're looking for when you go to the movies. What about yourself? Did you, did this nobody become somebody for you?
I had a good time with it, yeah. Like, me and my friend were simultaneously giggling when people were being hit by chairs. It was like, yeah, I've missed that feeling, and it's another good thing. Like, if I'd watched that at home, I'd have been kind of like, I would have enjoyed it. But you know, when you're kind of like in a crowd and you're with people, you can't help but have a little giggle, a bit of fun. Yeah, I really enjoyed Nobody. It was what you kind of expected it to be, and so on. Yeah, it did not reinvent the wheel in any way. I'd seen a film like this a thousand times, but there's just something a bit comforting about a film like that. And yeah, it seemed to kind of go down well. Yeah, I thought it was highly enjoyable. I did find the needle drops slightly annoying. They were just, again, very heavy-handed. Some of them made me chuckle, but for me, one of the highlights of the film was Christopher Lloyd. He is the kind of, you know, Pavlov's gun, where you're just sitting there just like, he's gonna do something, when's he gonna do something? Like, he's there, like he's just sitting on his couch.
He's the Midsummer Bear, isn't he? It's like, what's, when are we gonna go back to the bear?
Yeah, and it was just like building up, you're like thinking like, there's no way he's just gonna be sitting watching like the TV, and then he gets some of the highlights of the movie, and then we get a bit of a post-credit stinger, I think it's safe to say, that could set things up for the future, which was quite interesting. So yeah, I enjoyed Nobody. It was one of those films, it was just nice to go watch a movie like that, where it was just like, it was daft, it was dumb. You watch the movie at the time, you think, oh, this is fantastic, 4 out of 5, loved it, great fun, you know, I had a blast. And then you come afterwards going, okay, well, it wasn't all that, but it was what it was, and that's more than enough. Like, if I have a good time while watching the film, I'm happy enough to take that to the bank. You know, it's not a film that I really need to reflect on afterwards, or, you know, think, it could have done a bit better here or there. It was like, one and done, enjoyed myself, had a good catch with a friend, had some chicken afterwards at Nando's. Yeah, solid evening.
It's a 3 out of 5 Nando's chicken style movie.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, for me, yeah, it's one of those ones where it would if you've been watching it at home by yourself, probably 2-3 stars. But I think, like you say, there's certain films you get a better response when you're in the cinema, because I was, when you were sort of talking about sort of the people's reactions on the screen that you were in, I was thinking back to, I think it was John Wick 3, the one of the first fights in John Wick 3, the sort of when they stumble into like this old knife museum or something, and they start like throwing hatchets and everything. And it's like the crowd were going absolutely crazy for that moment in the cinema. I think, yeah, when you get a sort of amped up sort of Friday night crowd sort of fully invested into that sort of thing, then that's the sort of what cinema is there for. It's like, yeah, at home you'd be like, yeah, but when you come out of it there, you're probably initially raving about it for like 2 hours, but then when you wake up in the morning, you're like, yeah, it was all right.
So I think a film that we would say is is cinema, is kino, would be the father. So Anthony Hopkins plays a man who refuses all assistance from his daughter as he ages. As he tries to make sense of his changing circumstances, he begins to doubt his loved one, his own mind, and even the fabric of reality as he battles dementia. So this is a film that I've said it before, I think, on this show, that I misjudged this one so incredibly badly. I think we had an opportunity, maybe, what was it, last August, to watch a screener for it. And you were like, Lee, the father's like, there's a screener for it. You should watch it. Just log in, check it out. And I was kind of like, I remember going, oh, I don't think I've heard of this one. And I looked up and it was like, Anthony Hopkins, Olivia Colman, British drama about an old man battling dementia. And I was like, nah. And it wasn't through like, oh my god, I've seen family or friends go through that, it's painful, I don't think I could sit and watch that. I was like, oh, I've seen this film before, like it's you know, it's Oscar bait, not interested, not for me. And then as the months went on and people actually started to see it and rave about it, I was like, oh, maybe I made a mess here, maybe this could have been one of my highest rated films of last year. I think I ended up catching it in about January or late December, but I really, really misjudged this one. Like, and I can imagine, and I feel like some of that's been reflected probably in the response to Anthony Hopkins winning the Oscar. People like, oh, it's an old man playing a, you know, a person that's unwell. Like, of course he wins the Oscar. How predictable. It should have gone to Chadwick Boseman, etc. But, you know, I think once you watch the film, it truly is a masterpiece. And much like we spoke about with things like Sound of Metal, it really presents it in such a unique and innovative way, something that happens to a lot of people that we love and care for out there, that is such a horrible kind of killer, and in terms of what it does to people and how it can strip people away. And, you know, I've seen films and TV shows about people losing their memories and their minds, and it all plays out very conventionally, people talking to people, talking about their feelings. You know, we see the pain reflected on their loved ones. Whereas this, I think, just the way it presents itself, you know, yes, you can tell it's been adapted from the stage and so on, but I think the way they've done it here is so unique and brilliant, just constantly mixing up who's playing the daughters. You really get an insight into Anthony Hopkins' character's mind as it degrades, and I was just genuinely stunned by the portrayal, the acting, and this approach. And I was like, that must be kind of what it's, you know, I can't say for sure, but that must be what it's like to go through a horrible process like that. And it puts you in that person's shoes, and if, you know, if it was ever something that came to people I loved, I would be able to watch this film and have a, you know, a further degree of sympathy and empathy. And it puts the onus on what is it like for someone to go through dementia, as opposed to what's it like for the people around them to struggle and suffer with them. It, you know, that it's very rare that we've seen something like that represented on screen.
Yeah, but does it rank higher than The Relic for you?
Well, I have also still to see The Relic in the cinema. I was a bit mixed on it, or watching it on a screen or on my laptop. Because the film is very moodily lit, it is not well kind of, does not look good on a MacBook screen. So I am a bit mixed on The Relic, but I am open to viewing it again. But I do doubt that it's better than The Father. So I do disagree with, I believe, The Good Doctor on this one.
I mean, yeah, because I mean, I was raving about you and say, yeah, you have to see this one. When I saw it, I think it was, could have been October, November or something like that, that BAFTA had a screen for it at the time, and I managed to catch it. And yeah, no, I think it would have been October, November, because it was before Ma Rainey's Black Bottom came out. And I was like, I watched it and I was like, well, I mean, that's like the easiest, you know, just stop the betting pool now. Anthony Hopkins is going to win the Oscar, hands down. No one else is going to be able to touch him. It was just like one of like the best acting performances I think I've ever seen. And then of course Chadwick Boseman sort of tragically passed away, and then Black Bottom came out, and then I was like, oh, okay, actually, you know, I thought it was just lip service, you know, because, you know, he passed away, but, you know, his performance was also good, very good actually. So I thought, okay, you know, they're probably going to give it to him, out of sympathy. And indeed, up until Oscar night, especially with the way they did the Oscars, everyone thought he was going to win. But it turns out that, you know, unfortunately, for Chadwick Boseman and his family, the Academy is predominantly made up of crusty old white men, and they will always choose a crusty old white man over anything else. The only thing that trumps a crusty old white man is a crusty old white man playing a real life person. And so, yeah, Anthony Hopkins won, and everyone was like, oh, this is an absolutely terrible thing. But I think anyone who said that it was a terrible decision had not seen The Father at that point, because I don't think you can watch this film and not give credit to Anthony Hopkins for an amazing performance. But it's not just his performance, which is great, about the film. I think, you know, it probably rightfully won Best Adapted Screenplay, because what Florian Zeller does is, you know, it's the way that the film's constructed. You know, I think apart from, I think it's maybe like the first scene which shows Olivia Colman walking to Anthony Hopkins' flat, not an apartment, set in London, so it's a flat. And then after that, it all takes place in the flat. And what you get is, like you say, Olivia Colman leaves, and then you get Olivia Wilkins sort of comes in and claims that she's his daughter. And then it's like, okay, what's the truth here and stuff like that? But because the majority of it is from Anthony Hopkins' perspective, and because he's suffering from dementia, it basically makes him the most unreliable narrator there is. And it's a very well put together thing of, yeah, so like you say, it puts you in the mindset of someone going through this where nothing can be trusted, not even your own interpretation of events and stuff like that. There was like a fantastic scene where he sort of walks into the kitchen and Rufus Sewell and Olivia Williams are having a conversation, and he sort of comes in halfway through the conversation. He's wondering what they're talking about. But as he stays there, eventually the conversation loops back around to then talking about him before he even came in the room. And it's just like things like that are just so well done. The way that the flat changes its layout and dimensions, how, you know, what it does is you're trying to piece together a puzzle where you're trying to figure out who's who and who relates to who. You've got Imogen sort of Poots turns up where she's meant to be one of his carers, but he says that she reminds him of his daughter, and it's like, well, were there two daughters and what happened to the other one and stuff? So it's all sort of very clever. You know, you've got Mark Gatiss as well, who's apparently Olivia Colman's husband, but then, you know, someone else is also shown to be the husband. So it's all very well done. I think I think it actually should have probably deserved to win. I think Sound of Metal won editing in the end, but I think this film should have won best editing, because editing and how it's all the scenes are put together and the narrative flow of it, that's where, you know, this film truly sort of sings and stuff like that. If I have any complaints about the film, it's potentially due to the ending of the film, which I don't want to go into details, because even though we both saw it at the end of 2020, it's only coming out sort of this week here in the UK, so a lot of people will still not have seen it. But let's just say the ending of the film is very, very similar to another play turned film that rhymes with toast gories, shall we say. And no, I've never not seen anyone sort of mention that, in the fact that it's almost identical into how it sort of plays out at the end. And I would love to be able to go into that into more detail one day, but obviously now it's not the time, because I don't want to ruin the film for anyone. Of course, if anyone has worked out my terribly guised assumption of the film is, and you've seen that film, then you probably know where the Father is heading. But yeah, no, I think, you know, we talked about how people are sort of brought together by action and stuff like that. I fully expect that when you go and see this one at the cinema tonight, I think there are going to be floods and floods of tears of people who are just either swept up in Tony Hopkins' performance, or, like you say, have known someone who has gone through this, and they'll probably get a fresh perspective of what that's like. And I think it will. I think it's really going to touch a lot of people in a lot of ways. And I think, yeah, it's going to do very, very well over here, just because, I mean, it's about as British as a British film can get as well.
Did you get the chance to see it, you said, at the cinema as well?
I haven't yet. No, I was going to go yesterday, but life got in the way. So I think maybe next weekend. I do want to see this one on a big screen as well. If nothing else, just to sort of see what other people are making of it, and when they come out at the end as well.
Yeah, so it's certainly going to be a change in tone in the kind of coming weeks now. We've kind of we've had the indie films, we've had some of the Oscar bait movies, and now kind of comes the big, maybe the white hope for cinemas next week, Fast and the Furious arrives. What's your kind of feeling at this moment, a week or so out? Are audiences going to come back for Fast and the Furious in cinemas next week? Is that going to be, you know, we've had a steady and solid start with places like Quiet Place 2 and audiences kind of trickling back, but do you think we're going to see Fast and the Furious saving cinemas a bit to an extent, kickstart or putting them into, you know, fifth gear now?
It's a tough one, to be honest. I'm not entirely sure. You know, when this whole thing sort of happened, I, in my head, was sort of seeing there's no way any film is ever going to get to like $1 billion box office again. It's just not going to happen between sort of day and date and stuff like that and capacities in cinemas. There's not going to be the audience to get for any film to get to sort of that. You know, US cinemas are cheering at the moment at the fact that, you know, Quiet Place has become the first film in 16 months to make $100 million at the box office. But, you know, Fast and Furious has already made, I think, around about $260 million worldwide, $212 million of that from China. So maybe, you know, it could get reached sort of $500 million or whatever. It's interesting to see how it's going to do. I think it'll do really well in the States. In the UK, it's interesting because it's coming in the middle of the Euro Championships. And we've got Black Widow coming in a couple of weeks as well. And I know that we moaned several years ago when was Ant-Man and the Wasp was delayed until after the World Cup over here, wasn't it? Was that right? Yeah, it got, yeah. So America got it. Like, we had to wait like 6 weeks or something before we were able to see it here. So it's interesting that they're still going ahead with that. We're starting to having to generate, you know, work through this backlog of blockbusters that came out, and you know, it looks like, you know, the independent cinemas are also going to be well served over the next couple of months because we've got. Quite interestingly, Supernova coming in 2 weeks' time as well, which is the Stanley Tucci suffering from dementia film, which was delayed to avoid competing against Anthony Hopkins at the Oscars. But it turns out, in terms of box office-wise, they're going to be competing against each other. And then we've got The Magnificent, another round, coming out in a couple of weeks, 2nd of July as well. So there's going to be lots of stuff for fans of all types of cinema to watch. But hopefully next week I will be heading down to Glasgow for the press screening of Fast and Furious. I know it's only 2 days before it comes out in cinemas, but it's the first Scottish press screening that I've been able to go to. So, hey, why not? And although going through to Glasgow to see Edinburgh on the big screen, that's going to be interesting. See what kind of reaction that gets, I think, from the Glasgow critics. I'm sure there'll be a few Edinburgh ones cheering when they get a sight of it.
Yeah, I'm going to hold out and see it a couple of days later in the IMAX on the Thursday. So, no, I'm looking forward to it. And, After Love is out on Friday at Filmhouse. I'm really looking forward to that as well. So, yeah, we'll have an interesting few films to kind of talk about again over the next couple of weeks. It's going to be, hopefully, we'll continue to have a nice mix as we're going to go forward.
Absolutely. And for fans of the A24 project, get ready for the 6th of August because Greenlight and Anzo have been dated same day, double bill. Oof. So yeah,
I haven't had a double bill like that since Midsummer in Fabric on the same evening. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so dust off your A24 project podcast earphones and get ready because we're coming back, baby.
Yeah, so thanks very much to everyone for joining us. Go, hopefully you'll be doing what we're doing and now all racing off to see The Father. Thanks everyone for listening. Bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.